Hello, welcome to Conservation Connections with Valley Stewardship Network. I'm Beth Summers, the Executive Director at Valley Stewardship Network, and I'm joined here in the studio today by Craig Thompson, a retired biologist from the Wisconsin DNR and bird expert, and Connor Cody from the Mississippi Valley Conservancy. So welcome. Thanks for coming in today.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Thanks for having us. I'm excited.
Well, today we're going to talk about a current effort we have going on with the Kickapoo Bird Habitat Initiative, which is an interagency group here in the Driftless region. And I'll talk more about details of the goals of that group, but I want to start off by talking about why we're focusing so much on bird conservation right now. So there was a recent study published by Cornell University talking about the extreme population declines that have been observed in North America. And since 1970, they estimate almost 3 billion birds have disappeared from North America. Craig, can you maybe give a quick overview of the primary causes that they think are driving those declines?
Yeah, so Beth, as you indicated, the statistic is startling. We've lost about a third of North America's birds since 1970, and there are actually a variety of factors that are conspiring to drive bird numbers down. The number one driver of bird declines is simply habitat loss, which continues unabated. And then you factor in outdoor cats and window collisions and collisions with communication towers and a number of other lesser factors. Those all contribute to diminishing bird populations. And so, as you had indicated, there are efforts afoot, including this that we'll be talking about today, that are intended to address and remedy that situation.
Yeah, it's a startling statistic, a third of birds gone since 1970. And luckily there are some simple actions that individuals can take, which I'll detail those later in our podcast. But as a group here in the Kickapoo region, we want to address that biggest concern, which is the habitat loss. Maybe we can talk a little bit about what an important bird area is, and then we'll get into talking about our local important bird area that we have here.
Sure. Important bird areas were set up in the state of Wisconsin. There's 93, and our local one here, the Kickapoo Valley Reserve Wildcat Mountain State Park, important bird area covers 54,000 acres from about Wilton in Ontario down the Kickapoo River, covering wildcat and KVR, and down to Lafarge. And the IBA was selected here because we have so much publicly available land. I read 40,000 of the 54,000 acres are public, with 14,000 private acres. So this area was identified as having a large amount of intact, large tracts of intact forest habitat. And it's very important for our interior forest birds and setting up important bird areas for conservation.
And why are we particularly interested in looking at forest habitat? I know that grassland birds also are a group that have been focused on as a group in decline, but why in this area are we focusing in on forest?
The Driftless area is particularly important because it's the most heavily forested landscape in southern Wisconsin. So some of the sub-watershed, some of the smaller valleys in this larger Driftless area that extends across portions of four states actually have 70 to 80% forest cover. And if you look, for instance, around Madison, or if you go to the southeast part of the state, down around Kenosha, Racine, Milwaukee, all you have are forest fragments. And so, a 40-acre woodlot or an 80-acre block of forest can be pretty big in those kinds of landscapes. But what our birds need in order to breed successfully is large contiguous tracts of land, at least hundreds of acres, preferably thousands of acres that are connected, that provide the kind of conditions that Connor had referenced, which are forest interior conditions. These are the birds that want to breed in really big blocks of woods and and do and can breed in smaller blocks, but just don't do as well for a variety of reasons. So this is primarily a forested landscape. There are other parts of Wisconsin, particularly to the southwest of Madison, that are extremely important in terms of grassland bird conservation. So just by nature of the landscape that we live in here, we focus on forest birds.
Yeah, and you know, we are really fortunate to have this large block of forest here that's of continental importance, right? I mean, migrants that are coming up from Central and South America are actually after the Ozarks, there's not a lot of forest, right, until they get to here, and then not a lot again until they get up into the boreal forest. So for stopovers, this is a particularly important area. So that brings us to the Kickapoo Bird Habitat Initiative, which is our interagency group that we have formed to address habitat conservation needs in the Kickapoo Wildcat and around the important bird area. So our group has experts from our region, including Valley Stewardship Network, the Mississippi Valley Conservancy, DNR biologists, Ho-Chunk Nation managers from the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, and also some local ornithologists who have agreed to contribute their expertise as well. So it's a varied group of people all coming together with the mutual goal of helping to figure out how to best manage this our very valuable, important bird area that we have in our region. So there's three main areas that this initiative is working. One is working with our public lands, so that's the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, Wildcat Mountain State Park, and the Ho-Chunk Nation lands to try and coordinate those management efforts. Craig, would you want to tell a little bit about how we're working to do that coordination?
Yeah, so you hit on a key, which is all of these efforts, in order to be impactful, what we're trying to do ultimately is bring conservation to scale. And what I mean by that is traditionally we've been very good at site-based conservation, so we can manage property X, Y, or Z specifically for a set of values that include birds, recreation, and so on. But what we need to do, but given the magnitude of the declines that we're confronting, we know that we need to up the ante and up our efforts. And so what we need to do is extend conservation beyond just a single property and bring it up to the point where whole groups of people and organizations are working within entire landscapes to have a greater impact conservation-wise. And so, Beth, to your question, there is a great deal of coordination and communication that occurs between the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, the Kickapoo Reserve, and the Ho-Chunk Nation in regard to who's doing what on their respective properties, because all these properties are contiguous. And as Connor had mentioned, this is literally the largest block of upland forest in a 24,000 square mile driftless area in the upper Midwest. And so it's incredibly important that we manage it appropriately, not only for birds, but for all of the biota that depend on this big block of forest. And that takes regular communication and effective communication between our groups. And so we get together regularly, convened by Beth, by the way, and we get together regularly and talk about who's doing what and how we can share resources and craft a vision for moving forward in a coordinated fashion.
Yeah, and one of our current efforts that we're working on in order to achieve that end is going out and doing surveys of breeding birds on these public lands and then providing that data back to managers. Connor, maybe you'd like to just go detail a little bit how we're doing those surveys and what we hope to achieve from that.
Yeah, of course. So last year we kicked off our first kind of survey to inform management recommendations, starting with Wildcat Mountain State Park. And we did this for a breeding bird survey in June to cover multiple different places throughout the state park, and all split up and did different surveys to collect as much data as we could to summarize the breeding birds that we were observing and kind of track those trends so that we could make informed recommendations about some of the habitat management practices that the park could implement. This year in 2025, we did the same for Kickapoo Valley Reserve. And right now we are wrapping up a report to share with the management board to inform their new management plan by taking a look at the breeding birds that we are picking up during the surveys and trying to provide some recommendations and some targeted advice on what land managers can do to improve the habitats that these birds rely on to breed throughout the summer.
Yeah, so in those breeding bird surveys, we're really specifically looking for certain rare and threatened species, especially so that we can provide recommendations to managers on where they could focus their conservation efforts of those habitats. And so one of the species that we keyed in on as a particular conservation concern is Louisiana water thrush. Craig, do you want to talk about Louisiana water thrush briefly and what they need for habitat and what we're looking for?
Yeah, so it's just a really cool species, Beth. It's one of our multitude of wood warblers that occur in eastern Wisconsin, in the eastern United States. And here in Wisconsin, it actually occurs at the very northern limits of its range. It's a habitat specialist, and so when you find breeding Louisiana water thrushes, they are always in association with high-quality cold water streams. These little birds, these little cryptic warblers, hop around the ground and hop into the stream and actually pull out aquatic insects, not only to feed themselves, but to feed their young. And so we know if we have something like a Louisiana water thrush, it's indicative of a certain kind of habitat type. Just so happens that that habitat type occurs only really in abundance, relatively speaking, in abundance in two places in Wisconsin. One is in the Baraboo Hills, the other is here in the Kickapoo Valley. And so when we're finding Louisiana water thrushes, and we did find them, by the way, you know, we're really excited. That's the kind of stuff that gets birders all jacked up. It's like, oh, everybody comes back and says, what did you find? And, you know, inevitably, one of the first things, if anybody finds it, is a report of a Louisiana water thrush, which is bragging rights for all practical purposes and the envy of the other birders who are not able to find it. So it's just fun to get out there and kick around in the brush and find all of these cool birds that Connor was referring to and then use that information to help shape our strategies moving forward.
Yeah, and it seems to be a helpful strategy to key in on certain species that have the most stringent habitat requirements and focus on them, because it kind of is an umbrella strategy that encompasses a lot of forest-dependent species, right?
Correct.
And this summer, we completed our breeding bird surveys at Kickapoo Valley Reserve, and we're currently working on a report that we're going to submit to the reserve's board for hopefully informing their current management plan. And I was surprised that we didn't find any cerulean warblers in the reserve this year, because they have been observed there in the past. Do you want to talk a little bit about ceruleans and why we aren't maybe seeing them?
So I'll just very briefly, and then I'll defer to Connor on this matter as well, because he's well-versed in these neotropical migrants. So ceruleans are a lovely bluish bird, hence the name cerulean, that occurs in the canopy, in uneven canopy. So if you're flying in an ultralight or a plane across the driftless area and you see a very even kind of carpet-looking canopy, you're not going to find them in those locations. They're in broken canopy, so high trees, low trees. But they're one of those species that requires very large blocks of forest in order to successfully reproduce from a population standpoint. But it's also a species that occurs in a group of birds we're quite concerned about, which are considered to be our long-distance migrants. These are the birds that you had referred to earlier, Beth, which are literally now headed down to Central and South America for the winter. Ceruleans winter in the Andes of northern South America. They winter at an elevation that is the same elevation that coffee is grown at. And as you might imagine, there's such a demand for coffee, one of the world's most largely heavily traded commodities. Much of the forest that they depend on in the winter in northern South America has completely disappeared and been replaced by either sun coffee or shade coffee, and perhaps we can talk about that later. But needless to say, this is a bird that's losing habitat on both ends of its hemispheric range, and as a result, it has declined by about 70% across eastern North America. So places like the Kickapoo Reserve, where they should occur because there's suitable habitat there, they do not. Not, I think, because of anything terrible that's happened within this IBA, but rather because of these large landscape scale changes that are taking place across the bird's hemispheric range. You know, there's no substitute for the forest that they need to have in South America, and as a result, we're seeing fewer of them come back every year. It's one of the species we're quite concerned about, and so whatever we can do then to try to make habitat conditions better up in the breeding range here in the Driftless area is going to be very important as it relates to overall efforts to save the species in eastern North America.
I think that's an important point too, that it will always be difficult to pinpoint exactly why we do or don't pick up a specific species during a bird survey, but our habitat recommendations and our strategy for getting all of these land managers together on the same page is that we can provide this space and this high quality habitat for the species when it is coming through on migration and hopefully staying and finding suitable habitat to breed in through the summer. So I think looking at our surveys, we can identify specific areas throughout the reserve or throughout the park that could be prioritized for management to improve or restore the conditions for the native habitat and that specific natural community that the species relies on. So in the case of cerulean warbler, that uneven canopy, I see them most often in the southern reaches of Wisconsin along the river. There's a lot of open oak woodland habitat and oak opening habitat. So it's kind of a little example of a type of recommendation that we can make to the park if we would like to improve habitat for ceruleans.
And Beth, if I can continue that thread, Connor made a really important observation, which is where he's finding cerulean warblers. And it turns out that if you look at all of eastern North America, here in the upper Midwest, again, the Driftless area is the largest block of expansive forest that remains, as you had mentioned, between the Ozarks and Canada's boreal forest. Really important for the birds that breed here, comparably so for the birds that migrate through those species that are considered to be passage migrants. But as Connor pointed out, we still have ceruleans in the Driftless area. This is, in fact, the most important area in the upper Midwest for that bird. In all of Wisconsin, we have more ceruleans than everywhere else. And so you start to get a feel then for the importance of the Driftless area as it relates not only to that species, but other species for which the Driftless area is hugely important. Baltimore Orioles, American Red Starts, this lovely little black and orange warbler that jumps around in the treetops, wood thrushes, and so on. And so as Connor pointed out, as we try to manage for these species that need big blocks, we're protecting and providing good quality habitat for all kinds of associated species, many of which are experiencing population declines as well.
Yeah, so we talked about our priority number one, which has so far been working with public lands to coordinate management efforts. But our number two goal with the Kickapoo Bird Habitat Initiative is to work with all of the private landowners that are within and around the important bird area. And there's actually a lot of private lands, aren't there, that are contiguous with that bird area. So we're putting out the call to people that live around the Kickapoo Valley Reserve and Wildcat Mountain area who are interested in improving the habitat on their land for birds. And we actually have group members that can go out to people's land, take a look at what they've got there, and give them a nice list of recommendations of things that they could easily do to help manage their habitat for birds. What kinds of recommendations do we generally make to landowners in order to help them improve their habitat?
Well, I think to start, I think the most important piece when we go out with a new landowner that we meet is just getting them excited about the birds that are on their property. And you may not need to have a lot of experience or prior knowledge on how to do land management and habitat restoration. Just getting out with the landowners and sharing what we're hearing and hearing their stories about the birds that they're seeing on their properties, either during spring migration, fall migration, which is happening right now, or through the summer for their breeding species, taking a look at what types of habitats they have on their property. And what we are hearing, we're able to make a few recommendations that might include invasive species control, timber stand improvement, maybe native shrub or tree planting, especially along forest edges. We try to, what we call feathered edges, is try to reduce the amount of hard edge between an open area and the forest to provide more habitat for a range of bird species. So I think it's always going to be property specific and landowner specific on what we're able to share with them, but there's a lot that a private landowner can do to improve the bird habitat on their property that can be small steps at the beginning and pretty cost effective as well.
Yeah, it's a really cool service that we're able to provide to our local landowners and send someone out and let them know what they've got on their land. And some people, it's a relatively easy lift to just get some more native shrubs on their land that they can bring in more species. So, you know, if listeners are interested in getting those kinds of consultations, they should contact Valley Stewardship Network, and we can definitely send someone out to make recommendations. And then, you know, the third big area of focus for this group is just getting the word out to the general public that there is a need for conservation for bird populations. And there are some really simple steps that the average citizen can take to help bird populations. Connor, do you want to help walk through us a couple of those easy steps that people can take?
Yeah, of course. So these steps really apply to anyone, whether they're in town, in a neighborhood, out in the country, whether you're a landowner or not, you can do a lot of these steps to help birds. But a couple of those include making windows safe and trying to prevent bird collisions. There's resources about what kind of decals you can use to prevent large windows from unfortunately, having birds crash into them. Keeping cats indoors is a really big one to reduce the amount of predation that cats can cause on bird populations. And a third one is planting native plants where possible, and reducing the amount of turf lawn will really provide a lot of habitat for the birds and all of the insects that they like to eat as well.
Yeah, and you know, Cornell University, they have a really great website where they detail these actions and what different things people can do. They also talk about avoiding pesticides, right, on your property, reducing your use of plastic. And Craig, maybe you could talk a little bit about bird-friendly coffee and how that helps birds and why that's important.
Yeah, that's a really interesting product. It's a coffee. So there are two ways to grow coffee, Beth. The first is all grown in Latin America and elsewhere in the tropical regions around the world. But Latin America is a particularly important producer. And there are two fundamental ways to grow coffee. The first is in full sun. It's just called sun coffee. And if you go down and you see these full sun plantations, they look like corn or soybeans, or just rows and rows of monotypes that coat the landscape. They're heavily infused with pesticides and with fertilizers in order to keep production high. And as a result, they're very unhealthy environments, not only for wildlife, but for people. Migratory birds, for the most part, do not use them at all. But the really wonderful way that coffee can be grown is under a canopy of native trees. That's called shade coffee. And what biologists that work in Latin America are finding is that shade coffee plantations are extremely important surrogate forests in areas where native forest has been eliminated for a variety of agricultural reasons. And they see all of these not only resident birds, these tanagers and flycatchers that are all piling into these native, these shade coffee plantations, but lots of migratory birds as well. So the upshot of all of this is that we can help sustain birds in the tropics. And this is maybe the most important thing we can do other than donating directly to organizations that conserve habitat in the tropics is simply by purchasing shade coffee. And it's some coffees you're going to, it's a little complicated. Some coffees you'll find labeled as shade coffee and bird friendly. Others are bird friendly, but not necessarily labeled as such. So your best bet in order to avoid being a confused consumer, which is a really easy place to end up, is simply to buy organic coffee, because most, not all, but most organic coffee is grown in a canopy of native shade trees. And as a result, it's good for people, it's really good for the environment, and it's particularly good for our migratory birds that depend on forested cover.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to say that here at Valley Stewardship Network here in Viroqua, we offer a brand called Birds and Beans, which is certified bird habitat coffee, is also organic, I believe. And so we have a number of different roasts to choose from. So if you stop in either at our farmers market booth or in our office, you can get bird-friendly coffee from us. And that and proceeds go toward our conservation efforts here in the Driftless too. And we also have some of those window decals that Connor referred to, that it's just sort of a row of little dots that every 2 inches, it forms sort of a grid of dots, and it takes away that reflectance from the window. So it's pretty easy to look past as a human, but for a bird, it creates, it gets rid of that illusion that they can fly through windows. So stop in the office and get some of those products that help us to conserve birds. And then I'll just touch on the very last of the 7 recommendations that Cornell has laid out, which is participating in citizen science. So downloading the eBird app and recording your bird observations helps contribute to our overall knowledge of bird population trends and where those birds are occurring. So it's an easy thing that is kind of a fun game to do too, that people can use to participate in that that effort.
And we do have an eBird account that anyone can share their checklist to, so that they get aggregated into our KBHI eBird account, and we can track the species that are being seen in the IBA. Anyone can tag their checklist with the KBHI space data account and share their checklist with us.
Yeah, good point. Well, thanks you both for joining me in the studio. It's really great to have you here today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.